Now, women took to social media and the airwaves in their droves this week to share their stories of street harassment, assault and violence in the wake of the murder of Sarah Everard in London. I'm joined this morning on the line by Holly Ryan from Dublin, who has her own story to tell and is also a really passionate advocate for women who have had an experience like this. Holly, good morning to you. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Susan. Thanks for having me on.
Listen, I think what happened with Sarah Everard this week, you know, I think it just really struck a chord with people in terms of the outpouring of stories from women that we saw on social media and on the airwaves speaking about their own experiences. And you are someone that came to my mind almost immediately when I saw that, because I know you've spoken about your own experience to Georgie Crawford on the Good Lobe podcast a couple of months ago about what happened to you back in 2015. And I really wanted to talk to you just to get your take on some of the narrative that has been going around, you know, over the past week. You might go back in time for me, for people who haven't heard your story, Holly, and tell us, I suppose, what happened that night.
Yeah, so as you said, Susan, I was attacked in 2015 at the age of 18. It happened in November. I'd been out for drinks for a friend's birthday and I had to leave early as I had college the next morning. So as a student, I had no money for a taxi, so I decided to get the Lewis. The Lewis was pretty busy. I mean, it was early enough, 10:30, 11. And there was a man who started to talk to me. I had made it pretty clear from the beginning that I was not interested in a conversation. And I moved seats twice and he proceeded to follow me each time. So when it came to my stop, I was very aware of his movements and he actually got off at the same stop as me. So I decided to wait back on the platform as I saw that he was heading in the same direction that I would have been heading. And I wanted to have him walking in front of me rather than behind me. So for context, I live about 150 metres from the Lewis stop. You can literally see my house. I couldn't possibly live closer to it. So as I said, I waited for a couple of minutes until he was out of my sight before I started to make my own way home. And as I stood on the platform, I started to call my boyfriend. And as I said, I was keeping an eye on where this man had gone and he had disappeared into a housing estate. So I decided to walk up the road and I stayed on the opposite side of the road to where I would usually walk as it was more well lit. So after I passed the estate that he had gone into, I had a look in and I saw no movement. So I continued walking, which could have been maybe about 20 metres. When I turned to look up and down the road before crossing into my own housing estate, and there this same man was charging right at me. I was knocked to the ground immediately. This man was entirely on top of me and he proceeded to sexually assault me, bearing in mind that I could see my house this entire time. So after a couple of minutes, a car pulled up beside where this was happening and the car just stopped, had its lights on, and there was no movement from the car. So I really braced myself thinking that this was his friend. I thought that I was going to be bundled into the back of this car. And it had really crossed my mind to mentally prepare myself for that, that there could have been 1 second where I could have had a chance to escape and that I needed to be fully aware. So what actually happened was that that car beeped their horn. And the man, the attacker, got up and ran away, at which point the driver got out of the car and he apologised and he said that he thought it was two lads fighting and he wasn't sure what to do. So also what happened at this time was that my mom and dad came running across the road as the sounds of my screams had actually woken them. So the Gardaí were called. The driver of the car stayed around to give his contact details as he had witnessed the attack. And next thing I know, I'm in my kitchen handing over my clothes in a sealed bag as evidence to give to the Gardaí. So they were really just chatting through everything with me. I was telling them as much as I could, really. I naively thought that if I verbalised it all to them, that it could be done and I could move on. I didn't realize you had to give an official statement.
Yeah, and your what you've said about, like, you know, kind of your dealings with the Gardaí is really interesting. I think it's kind of a real talking point from this week as well, in terms of some of the, you know, the victim blaming that goes on and some of the questioning. Mm-hmm. And you experienced that, especially in relation to, you know, how much you had drank, what you were wearing, those kind of things. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so as I said, I didn't realise I'd have to give an official statement, and I was very keen to verbally explain everything to the Gardaí in my kitchen before I went to sleep. You know, I was worried I could forget something vital. So as I was explaining, one of the Gardaí cut across me speaking, and he said to my dad, "Would you reckon she's had much to drink now?" Now, as I was 18, I ended up being the main point of contact for the entire case, as I was considered to be an adult. But in that moment, my entire story was thrown into question. And I mean, for context, I really had not had much to drink at all. I remember every moment more clearly than I would wish to. And I do understand that that question would have been relevant in a trial or in an official statement. But to not even ask me directly and to ask my dad while I was right there, it was just very dismissive. You know, now there was definitely no doubt from the Gardaí in terms of whether the incident had occurred, and there was definitely support on their behalf. But that question was the beginning of my experience of victim shaming narratives.
And then in relation to, you know, when you did give that statement officially and they were asking about what you were wearing, tell us about how you felt around all of that.
Yeah, so I went to give my official statement the next day, and I was asked all of the usual questions. You know, where did I sit on the Lewis? What did this man say? What did he look like? And then there came a question, can you tell us what you were wearing? So I proceeded to tell them that I was wearing jeans, a coat and over the knee boots. At which point I was interrupted, and he told me that he was going to write down that I was wearing boots. So just boots, not over the knee boots. He explained that if he wrote over the knee boots, he felt that if this ended up going to trial, that it would be used against me. So, I mean, you know, do we have a system where Gardaí are trying to protect victims from the criminal justice system?
It didn't end up going to trial, Holly. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, so as it turned out, the attacker was arrested. The Gardaí did put a lot of resources into finding him. But unfortunately, he ended up being given a warning due to the fact that he was only 17 years old. Now, as far as I'm aware, this was not a decision that was made by An Garda Síochána Síochána. They simply gather the evidence for every case and hand that evidence over to the DPP, the Director of Public Prosecutions, who decide whether a trial should take place. So in my case, as far as I was told, due to the fact that the attacker was 17 years old, he was assigned a juvenile liaison officer.
There was huge anger expressed this week, Holly, just to get back to this week's events, from women. This whole idea of the only way that we can keep ourselves safe is to stay indoors after dark, as if we should limit what we do in order to keep ourselves safe. How do we move on from that? How do we move past it being a woman's responsibility to keep ourselves safe by making our world smaller? And I'm sure, because you've had that experience of, like, leaving your friends at night, I'm sure you were going to you rang your boyfriend, you were going to text somebody probably to tell them you were home. We've all done it. We've all, you know, done that. As women, that's what we do. But I guess, how do we move past that? Or what's your view on that?
I think it's important to acknowledge that these fears that women have been speaking of, particularly this week, they're not solely derived from stories of people being attacked on dark nights. Because as we know, these situations, they are rare. I think for many people, these fears stem from experiences that they were forced to brush off as maybe harmless fun or just a bit of banter. And I think it's the realization that these experiences bring to women that we can easily end up under the physical power of the wrong man. We can't continue to tell women that they should alter their behaviors, because it shifts the responsibility away from the choices and actions of the perpetrators of these crimes. And I think the mere suggestion that there is any influence caused by women's choice of clothing or alcohol consumption. You know, it's a symptom of a society that has accepted gender-based violence as something that we need to work around rather than tackle. And I think if in 2021 we're still reinforcing the notion that women should shrink themselves in a society to suit the unwanted advances of certain men, we're not going to get anywhere. I think women resent the fact that this is a reality, and even more so, we resent the notion that someone could assume that we don't consider all of these potential risks every time we step outside our front door.
Yeah, I think it was really powerful to hear, you know, people share stories of things that they do, because often probably, you know, like I would have done all those things. I would have crossed the road. I would have avoided alleyways. I would have locked my car door the minute I got into it. But I didn't necessarily realise that everybody does that. I kind of thought maybe that was just me. So to hear everyone speak of the same experiences, I think was really powerful. And I mean, obviously, the other thing we saw happen this week was at the same time as people were speaking about the absolutely devastating murder of Sarah Everard, also trending on Twitter was hashtag not all men, as some men took issue with being tarred with, you know, the same brush as men who abuse women. You're very passionate about sort of the benefit of bringing men into this conversation if we are actually going to make any inroads.
Absolutely, yeah. I think from the narrative that was occurring online this week, or even the lack thereof from men, I think it was clear that there's a real feeling amongst men that most men are good and kind, which is absolutely true. And they feel like they've been dragged into a conversation that they never asked to be a part of. And I think that this point is particularly interesting because women do not ask to be involved in this issue. It's something that we just have to accept as a reality. So for the men that feel personally victimized by these conversations, I would advise them to consider the common ground that they hold with women who also did not ask to be part of this conversation either. We definitely need more male voices on this issue because the silence this week was deafening, in my opinion. And I think what women want is for men to understand that the threat is present, not only when walking home, but on public transport, in nightclubs, in some workplaces. And I think that the time of day is largely irrelevant, but women just can't continue to shrink their presence in society in order to suit the urges of certain men. And we need the voices of other men to help stamp out this issue.
Holly, I can't imagine the week was easy for you, I'm sure, when stories like this become big news items and it's all over social media. Do you relive in a way? I know you're 6 years on and I know you're doing really, really well, but does it bring it all back?
I think what's been very difficult for me to see is that the skepticism around other people's stories and the doubt that's occurring online when other people are trying to share their own traumas. And I think there's a couple of different factors at play here. First, I think we don't have the statistics to support these arguments. And why don't we have these statistics? Because the underreporting of gender-based violence in Ireland is a major issue. And I think without the statistical evidence of the rate at which these crimes actually occur, I think some people find it difficult to accept that these threats are present for women. And then I think we need to look at why these crimes are so underreported. I think people don't feel protected by the criminal justice system. I think people are acutely aware of the difficulty that a trial would bring, from cross-examination to personal history being exposed in a courtroom. And the term for this is re-traumatizing, you know, as if the initial attack was not difficult enough for the victim. They must then relive it through the reporting process. And I think that these dismissive attitudes are also very damaging to the reporting process because they increase the shame and the stigma and the self-doubt that's associated with gender-based violence. And I think personally that the most shameful issue here is that between our society and our criminal justice system, that these people have no presence.
Yeah, absolutely. You make so many good points. You are doing well, though, yeah?
I am. Yeah, I am. I mean, I think it's important to focus on there are some reforms that are going on in the system at the moment that we can only look at with hope for the whole issue of underreporting in general. I think that we are heading in the right direction. There was a review that was recently conducted on mainly the experiences of vulnerable witnesses in the prosecution and trials of sexual offences. So following this review, Minister for Justice Helen McEntee introduced supporting a victim's journey. So it was really a plan to help victims and vulnerable witnesses in sexual violence cases. So essentially aimed at reducing the fear that victims associate with the reporting process, you know, from long dragged out trials to helping them in preparation of a court case and post-trial support. So ultimately aiming at increasing the reporting figures of these crimes that are occurring regardless of whether they're reported or not. I think this is going to take a long time to show whether it has made any impact on reporting figures. So it's difficult to hold out hope. But for now, I think we can focus on as a society is ensuring that these stories are met with compassion and respect and understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. Holly, thank you for talking to me on News Talk Breakfast this morning. Please keep up the good work that you do, because you speak so much sense on this issue, and I think it will do good going into the future. So thank you for all that you do, and thanks for speaking to us this morning.
Thanks for having me, Susan. Always delighted to have a chat with you.